Greetings and welcome to Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And our guest today needs no introduction, so we'll just get right into it. Hi. No, we give him a little bit of an introduction. Scott has been doing podcasting since the early days, actually since before the term podcasting, back when they were MP3 blogs and stuff like that. You know, like, the people who listen to this know who you are. He's my co-host on PMS. He's my co-host on FilmSack. He's one of the reasons we do all these damn things that we do. And his name is Scott Johnson.
Whoa, that is true. I can both claim the name and deny it at the same time. That's me. Thanks for having me on. This should be fun. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, you and I don't talk music except kind of in passing on TMS every once in a while, or if there's a soundtrack thing in FilmSack. But very briefly, you know, do we ever get a chance to talk music? And very, very, even more briefly, way to phrase that sentence, do we ever get to talk about music you like? Usually I'm the one who's saying, oh, dude, you got to check out this new album by Chverches. It's excellent. Or et cetera. So
I like that, though, because I get a lot of my, I have to admit, a lot of the stuff I listen to these days is often spawned by something you'll bring to the show. It'll be like, check out these guys. They're real cool. It's some indie band or it's some cover. And I'll think, oh, no way they even exist. I'm going to go and get it all. And I'll end up with like all their albums. And so it's that's worked out great for me musically.
Like, well, I like being everybody's pusher, music pusher. Nice. The first taste is free. And what we've been doing for this show, which is the sub show of Soundography called You Gotta Listen to This, is something we've been doing in between seasons, is having our friends tell us an album that is either important or special to them in some way, unique to them, and something that 99 times out of 100 we haven't heard of before. And you absolutely nailed it, because I'd never heard of the artist or this album before. Now tell us first who you picked and the album.
All right, so it's a little bit obscure, I'll admit, but for whatever reason it had a big impact on me. It is a guy named Ray Lynch, and the album is Deep Breakfast. And it's all from my big time new age phase. And by that, I don't want people to think, oh, Scott got all with crystals and the whatnot.
Right.
It was just that music. I was so into it. So like the Narada stuff and the Wyndham Hill collections and just that whole era. I'll even admit to a little bit of Mannheim Steamroller during Christmas and stuff like that.
Sure.
I don't really like that stuff now, but a lot of the same music from that time I still sort of like a lot. And one of them was this kind of in those circles anyway, kind of a breakout album called Deep Breakfast by Ray Lynch. And he had a follow-up to it, which was pretty good as well. But
it was called Shallow Lunch.
Yeah, Shallow Lunch. Heavy Dinner. It was fantastic.
I'm a bit peckish. Fourth meal.
He was really into that. And people teased me a lot about this, because at the time I was also really into Depeche Mode, and I was really into, you know, kind of just my general other music phase. But there was something about it, kind of space age, synthy, out there kind of approach to music I'd never heard before. And it was all instrumental. There's no singing in it. And it just really got me. And even to this day, I hear that stuff and I just get excited. I love it.
There's a very calming and mellowing aspect to this. I found listening to this album that I wanted to just kind of recline the chair and just kind of sit and listen to it and not try and have it on in the background while I'm typing or working on something. It's like, no, I just want to kind of let this envelop me and wash over me.
Yeah.
How did you come across this specific album? Like in new age circles, is he regarded as as the ham and cheese that you start with, the gateway drug?
Well, what's funny about that is, so that this album Deep Breakfast was released in 1984. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at the time, because I wasn't introduced to it until his second album No Blue Thing came out in 1989. Okay. And so that came out, but I ended up hearing Deep Breakfast first. And in my head, they were all one album, and I couldn't quite, you know, even when a new artist comes out, I'm kind of not sure what's coming or what the chronology is or whatever. But I just got swept up into it and then immediately bought No Blue Thing and loved it. And that's pretty much it, though, for me. He has other stuff previous to that. The Truth Is the Only Profound and The Sky of Mind. That Sky of Mind was the first time he'd done anything with Wyndham Hill. They helped make that album. Mm-hmm. And Deep Breakfast was really the breakout, and No Blue Thing was a good follow up. But beyond that, he had some other couple things, but one was a best of, and the other one was not as well received in 93, and then just kind of faded into obscurity. He was recently in the news, and this is the weird bit, because after you got with me, I thought, well, I should dig around and see what's going on with Real Inch these days.
Yeah.
And he's still around. He popped up in the news because one of these big California fires wiped out his house and studio.
Right.
Or something in California. And then
the Valley fire in 2015. Yeah.
And then I found out. Oh, that's right. That's the one. And then I found out he's a Salt Lake City native. No idea.
Right.
All these years, no idea. It was a hometown guy. I had no idea. That was absolutely news to me just this last week. So learning a few things even now. But he just had this brief little window. He took everybody by surprise. And if you were into that scene, you know, you had kind of all the guys you knew. But this guy just kind of crept up and went, whoa, who's this? And then went away almost as fast. But yet, you know, a lot of people, at least I still have a lot of fondness for those albums, especially those two.
Yeah, for sure. And I think when I started listening to this, there was a familiarity to it. And one part of that is a familiarity we'll talk about in just a minute. But the other familiarity was, I think you've played this maybe ending like a post-stream kind of getting ready for the next Twitch stream, or maybe it was the end of ELR or something.
Oh, totally possible, sure.
Yeah, where I recognized Celestial Soda Pop, that first song. Yeah.
And these guys, like, if there was a playlist I could throw out there to people, just like names that would be on that playlist, it'd be like David Arkenstone, who also happened to live in Utah for a while. Yeah, and a quick note to our Warcraft friends out there, the Battle for Azeroth soundtrack that is so good right now, lots and lots of the stuff that's said in the troll stuff is Stone's back helping write that stuff. So.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay.
He said things for Blizzard before he did the Taverns album, which was like all these tavern takes on different tavern types in various parts of Azeroth, and is apparently a big WoW fan, but his recent stuff here for all that Zandalari stuff is really, really good. He's got a real knack for like jungle and kind of Anasazi Indian sort of sounds and that sort of thing. But these guys are great. David Lance was another one. I mean, I was just so into these guys, and for whatever reason, at the end of the day, Ray Lynch was, despite the brevity of his appearance on the charts, it's the one that I would just think so fondly of. And I can listen to it anytime. It always takes me back, just takes me right back to the late 80s, early 90s, and just makes me remember why I loved that whole time. And I don't, you know, I think a lot of that music has fallen not out of favor, but it's just blended into everything else. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really have its own like weird section anywhere anymore. And it's kind of a bummer because I think it was some pretty innovative stuff going on then.
For sure. Yeah. One of the things that I was comparing it to when I was listening to it was Vangelis. It's got a very Vangelis Blade Runner kind of, maybe not quite as lush as that stuff. But of course, you know, there was a whole different style of making that, but it's got that comfort sound to it.
Yeah. Comfort synth is a good way to put it. Maybe like there's a synthetic late 80s quality to it that is definitely from the era, but it also feels like it's the future. And right. Vangelis is like that too. And that's, I think I was drawn to it. I was actually drawn to anything that was just like spacey and out there, would make my imagination go places and kind of to tell a story in a weird way. And absolutely this album's one of those.
Would this be a soundtrack to drawing for you?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. There are times when even now I'll just, you know, jump out to a music service and round up playlists that are just like, you know, best of that era or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's always in them. That's kind of when you had asked me, hey, think of an album and an artist. Part of the reason that popped up is I do this on the regular, and I had heard him recently and went, oh, I should totally just bring that out and air that out and tell people what's up with that guy, because he's obscure for sure. I don't think too many people, have checked that stuff out. But it's funny. Some of it's weird and rhythmic and almost has a beat to it, but not like, I don't know. It's a very odd mix of style, and that I think people will either, I think you either just gravitate to it immediately or not.
Yeah, no, there's much more of a rhythm than I usually attribute to New Age, which I feel sometimes sounds like wind chimes in 40 weight motor oil. But this one's definitely got a rhythm and like a hummability to it as you're listening to it, where you can be like, all right, just like you catch the melody pretty early on, and you're able to kind of hum along to it, as opposed to it being this kind of unpredictable, here's a little tinkle sound right here, and then I'll bring this auto harp up. And
right. Yeah. It's not what you expect, but it strikes me, if this guy was still in his sort of prime working today, this guy would write some really cool video game soundtracks.
Oh yeah.
And I don't mean that as a pejorative or as a lesser than or anything like that. I am a enormous fan of current day, official soundtrack work that's happening in video games, both small and large. And I think he would have fit right in. He feels a little bit ahead of his time in that way.
For sure. So let's talk about a few of the tracks on here. Are there songs that, that jump out to you, and why do they jump out to you?
Oh my gosh. That's such a great question.
And one that you were not prepared to answer based on that.
No. I held them all in pretty high esteem. The big hit from that album was Celestial Soda Pop. Which is the leading track.
That's because it's darn near a cover.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things that Hammond pointed out to me, and I would have heard it had I listened to it, when he did. But the melody is, the first part of the melody is the beginning notes of Call Me by Blondie. That color me your color, baby.
It totally is. Oh my gosh, I'm never going to hear it the same again. It didn't occur to me. Maybe that's why. I mean, that actually got radio play at some point, a little bit. And I think that's probably why got a very poppy thing going on.
It does, yeah.
But if I had to pick one out of there that I think is, I don't know, I like Rhythm in the Pews. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Just like that one. But I really like it all. Like, there's nothing in there. I don't feel like there's a track. There's not a track I skip.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. If I only had a complaint, it would be that track three, Falling in the Garden, is a little short. I wish that was a little longer. Most of the songs are 4 minutes plus. Some was up not as high as seven, I think, seven and a half maybe.
Right.
And I like them long. I like my New Age nice and long.
Yep.
And that song's a little short. But outside of that, the whole thing's great. It's a pretty short album. It's only eight or nine?
Eight tracks. And yeah, 40 comes in at 40 minutes long, which is it's unheard of these days. You feel like you're getting ripped off if you pick up an album that isn't at least an hour long these days.
Yeah, I feel like that just doesn't happen anymore. And the follow-up's even shorter. I think it's like six or seven tracks. And
oh wow, and,
I don't do that anymore. But it's just maybe part of this is it doesn't overstay its welcome. Mm-hmm. maybe 24 tracks would be way too much of this kind of.
Right, you know? Sure.
So for me, maybe the brevity is part of the, you know, it's just a short little visit I can make every once in a while, and it feels good.
It's cool. Just read this. In 1989, Cashbox magazine reported that the album was the only gold album ever by a new age artist on an indie label, which is huge. I mean, you know, competing against the Mannheim Steamrollers and the John Teshes and mm-hmm. stuff like that with an indie label. So that's Yanni.
Oh yeah, Yanni. I went to a Yanni concert. Here's the problem with actually, you just brought up a good point. It was, yes, extremely successful in his niche and deservedly so and all of that. Mm-hmm. But that was part of the problem with the new age craze, but whatever that genre was, that it, you had to lump these guys in it. You had to lump the co-host of Entertainment Tonight and the creator of the NBA Tonight theme on NBC. Like they didn't know where else to put these instrumental artists. And so you get John Tesh and Yanni crammed in with, you know, David Lynch and we say David Lynch for some reason, mm-hmm. and Michael Getter or Bill McLaughlin, or these guys that were just like, you know, Paul Speer, Hans Zimmer, these guys at the time, Hans Zimmer, who's now, you know, hugely famous for his film scores, but, you know, mm-hmm. poked his head into the early days of this stuff, did some albums for Narada, and he was really good. But they were a thing apart from the John Teshes of the world. But there was no separation. Like you went to that section and it was Yanni, John Tesh, mm-hmm. 10 amazing artists. And then another Yanni type guy. And this, right. I don't poo poo on Yanni or John Tesh too much, but they were definitely like,
poppy, new age.
Very, very mainstream, mm-hmm. flowy tuxedos while they played on a piano. Like just
right. kind of, almost more about the form than the function.
Yes, very good way of putting that. So they bummed me out. The entire business bummed me out at one point because I don't know, it got messy and weird in there. These days, I actually haven't really checked to see who is, you know, is anybody making new age or whatever the continuation of this kind of music is. That sure. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I imagine at some point you can tell Siri, you know, hook up your Apple Music account and say, hey, play the new breakout new age tracks. Mm-hmm. The new hot new age music that's climbing up the charts.
And yeah. Sadly, yeah. Though, it's probably going to sound a lot like the stuff that was going on in the 90s.
Maybe. I mean, in the 90s, I don't know, the 90s changed a lot of stuff. And also the 90s brought in some really cool techno and industrial music that I was really into as well. I mean, that stuff's all connected anyway. And I like instrumental music and I like stuff with a beat. And I'm cool with most modern EDM and house music and that kind of stuff's really cool as well. But I really do think there's a place for this quieter, more focused sort of you know, just kind of a softer approach to electronic music. And
yeah.
And like I say, a lot of it survives. You can go see about 10 movies this year with Hans Zimmer tracks in it. And if you want, you can listen to the WoW soundtrack and go, oh my gosh, well done, Arkenstone. Like they're still out there and they still do really well on their own. But I just don't know if it's as unique a thing as it used to be. And it's, you know, we don't really have record stores anymore. So there's really not that kind of feeling of like, that's a section that I can go to and right. visit and find a discovery. It's just more obscure now, I guess.
Well, it would be interesting to start with Celestial Soda Pop on Spotify or even on Apple Music, where you do the radio feature, say, all right, make a station based on this song and see if it pulls in anything from the last couple of years and what, you know, what does it pull in from the last couple of years that kind of compares to this? Cause I feel like if you do ask, you know, Siri to play the current top new age, you'll get something different than if you started with something from this album and said build a station around it.
Yeah, so you have, for example, the playlist that suggests are Milt Jackson's On the jazz compilation. Like people want to cram it into jazz, people want to put it into other stuff. Their shared playlist that that I'm looking at right now that are mostly Ray Lynch songs, but they're just rearrangements of mainly those two albums or his best stuff.
Keep in mind what how you're feeling about jazz might be how people saw New Age, whereas they put the Yannis and the John Teshes and what you might be assuming is the jazz that's comparable to this isn't the Miles Davis or the Dave Brubeck or whatever. It might be something that's maybe closer to this.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Similar artist that says, a band called 2002, John Adorney, I've heard of him, Kitaro, who I was way into for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And right here, I've just learned something new with you guys, David Arkenstone and his wife, Diane Arkenstone. Who knew she had her own little thing going on?
Look at that. Very, very cool.
Yeah. We have to awesome. Go. You know what? You got me in the mood. <I'm gonna> find all this stuff, see what I can Good. Find.
See, that's what's been happening with this as well, with a lot of the other people we've been doing this with. Tom kind of rediscovered this cover album that we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the show. Nicole started listening again to Biff Naked and discovering new stuff that she'd been doing since we did that show. So it's funny that a show that's intended to open the mind of the audience is also doing the same thing to the hosts.
Which is I'm glad. I am too. I think this is a really cool way to do that. This happens with, speaking of Tom, with this current Geek Film Festival thing we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even the autopilots, what we end up doing is we'll see a thing I had never heard of or I'd never seen just because I never got around to it and it's too good for film sack kind of thing or something.
Right.
And then I'll watch it and go, oh, my gosh, how did I never see this? And then I'll get interested in old stuff. And even we watched a Charlie Chaplin movie and then I spent the next evening for like 3 hours watching old
Laurel and Hardy, yeah.
Movies and clips and stuff, because as a kid, I love that stuff. And it's like rediscovering it. And I don't know, there's some value in that. And hopefully the audience is hearing us talk about this stuff and getting excited too. Cause I think there's, even if you've never given the time of day to a New Age album, I think you might hear this Ray Lynch thing and go, oh, Scott's right. There's something here, you know, it's too bad it didn't continue, you know, too much past it.
And we'll have little clips in the show here as we're talking about a few of these songs. But hearkening back to what you just said a minute ago, the fact that you were able, after watching that Charlie Chaplin film, to go and find Laurel and Hardy stuff to watch, it's a new thing that we've never been able to do before in consuming media, is this kind of the Spotify tangent. This start at dot one, follow that line to dot number two, follow that line to dot number three. You know, when you and I were growing up, somebody recommended an album, you're like, oh, great, who else does this sound like? And they'll say, oh, four or five other people. You'd have to wait till either they played them on the radio or you went to the record store and you could listen to samples there, or, mm-hmm. you know, there wasn't a way of saying, oh, let me hear that now that comes off of this, that the other recommendations that kind of go with this.
Yeah, we live in a magical time and we should never forget it. Minute we forget it may get taken away from us or something. It's crazy. You can finish up something and immediately go, oh, what about those other weird black and white things from the freaking 30s?
Right.
And
right.
They're all on, you know, I think I got them on Amazon Prime. They're all just there and you just watch them and it's like no big deal. And if you think to yourselves, oh, geez, I wonder what happened to that other silent film actor. Click. Oh, there he is. All right, I'll watch this. Like yeah. It's an embarrassment of riches. It's insane. This is true of music, of movies and TV and video games, like across the board. It's kind of stupid how available everything is. And it totally. Should not forget how it's a golden age and we should just enjoy it and not poo-poo it because it's amazing.
Yep, for sure. Very good. Well, that seems like a great place to put a pin in this. Scott, thank you so much, man. This is a great, again, you know, so far, every album that people have recommended, if it wasn't one I was already familiar with, I've ended up adding tracks to my own library to say, oh yeah, I'm going to listen to that when it comes up on shuffle and hear a few of these as they get sprinkled into the rest of my music. So, cool. Thank you for turning me on to Ray Lynch. I know that little segment will never get, snipped out and used in a mashup anywhere.
Can't even say it without thinking about it. Can you?
I can't. Never again.
Well, it's my pleasure. I love this stuff, and I think this is a cool little off squirt you guys are doing, for lack of a better term. Also, I get to say poo poo it on the show, and
right.
Also,
and off squirt.
Exactly. And then I'm happy that Hammond ruined that song for me, making me realize that it's really a cover of something else.
Well done, Hammond.
I'm good at that kind of stuff.
Attributed cover.
Hey, want me to do it again?
Yeah, do it again.
Okay, Tiny Geometries.
Yeah.
Sounds like the movie that plays as you walk into Epcot's World of Communication.
Oh, cool. I'm going to have to go back and check it then. I've never actually been to Epcot, so maybe I'm safe on that one. All right.
And it's not like it's a note for note cover of it. It just sounds like that's what would be playing as you walk into the Hall of Communications at Epcot.
Right. I think I may still be okay with that. I guess all I would say to people is if you listen to this album on this recommendation or based on the show and you go in, oh, this is good, give No Blue Thing a chance, because it's different, but rad. Also rad. Yeah.
Very cool. I will do that after this. Awesome. Well, Scott, thank you very much. It's a silly thing to ask because we do it all the time, but where should people look for more Scott Johnson online?
Well, they should go to the internet, click up there in that little bar up there with the hole in it. You can say stuff in there and type out frogpants.com. You'll find everything I have going on there. That includes projects I do already with the great Brian Ibbett. And you can find many fantastic things, including a bunch of artwork and other stuff. If you would rather just hear me say things with less context, you can follow me on Twitter at Scott Johnson.
Well, Scott, thank you very much. And that's going to do it for this edition of Soundographies. You got to listen to this. On behalf of Scott and Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.